anything combat with Johnny K.
But it's anything combat, though.
Welcome back, Convince the Anything Combat Show. I'm your host, Johnny K. Today, we've got a 10-0 prospect, knockout artist, most talked about bantamweight contender in the UFC. Please welcome to the show, Malcolm the Machine Wellmaker.
What's going on? What's going on, man?
What's up, Malcolm? So basically, to start off, let's talk about what's been happening in your life as of late. So your last three performances, you've had the Contender Series, you've had two UFC performances. You've gotten three right hooks. That's three punches in total. And that's also, because I calculated it, that's 141.67 second average fight time between all three. So how does that make you feel?
Man, it's crazy when I take a step back and look at just how, you know, impressive my first three performances on the big stage has been. I even blow myself away, man. You know, I had, you know, an idea of, you know, what my run would look like when I got here. But this far, far surpasses it. And I think, you know, just the reactions I'm getting and the way people are enjoying seeing me perform, man, I think that I have a good career ahead of me in the UFC.
100%. Did you always know that you had that power?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I've known for a while. In my very first amateur MMA fight, you know, it was my first time fighting with Four Ounce Gloves. I had done kickboxing and I got some TKOs, but my very first amateur fight, I hit a dude with an uppercut, and I mean, his body just collapsed. And then, you know, from that day forward, I believed in my power a ton. So
I looked at your Instagram and you said that not even in your wildest dreams did you think it would be like this. It feels bigger than life, but it's not. It's real. We did it. So run me through that. You were in your position in life, and now, you know, through your hard work, you've gotten to this spot now where you're living good. So just tell me and tell everybody at home that could be in the same position as you, amateur fighting and professional fighting on the regional scene. What was it like for you to put in the work and finally reap the benefit?
Man, you know, like I said, I had visions of what it would be like to be here. You know, you think you know what it would feel like to have what you consider success. And maybe my story is a little bit more exceptional than most because of just how successful and how fast it's been. But, you know, everything felt exactly how I thought it was going to feel times 10. Like, it feels better than it felt when I envisioned it. You know, to actually be able to do nothing but train full time, to actually be, you know, getting flown out by the UFC to do their fights, to get these big paydays and be interviewed by all these different people, man. Like, I thought it was going to be sweet, but to actually live it is it actually feels better than you ever could imagine, man. So, you know, I look back at all the grinding and the hard work I did, and it was well beyond worth every sacrifice I made.
Everybody's seen it. It's kind of viral on your social medias with you with all the gear when you were doing the pipe fitting. So
yeah.
Tell me, when you were pipe fitting and then you would leave that job and then go to training and you had to balance like your life and your family, now that you're able to quit the job with, you know, the UFC bonus money and all the rest, tell me, what was the main emotion that you felt being able to finally put all of your efforts and your time into a singular thing, which is your training and your craft?
Man, you know, the biggest difference is the amount of stress that's on you physically and mentally. You know, it's so hard to, even if I'm not 100% physically worn out, to force myself to go from my 10-hour day and be at my house for less than an hour and be right back into a gym until, you know, the end of the night. You know, it's so psychologically taxing. But like the feeling that I feel the most now that I'm in the position that I'm in is just like peace, man. I have this amount of peace that I've never had. Like, my stress levels are so low. The way I feel about the work I'm doing, I feel like I'm really fulfilling my purpose. You know, I just have this amount of peace and this contentment and fulfillment in the work that I'm doing on a day-to-day basis. And It's really just like living a dream, man.
So I mentioned the knockouts. Everyone saw the Cameron Simon. That was big when you got it. Moutinho, he's really, really hard to knock out too. You sent him flying. Run me through with both of these performances now. How much momentum do you feel that you have in there? Because I know you're an active fighter. So tell me, with these two high-profile fights, how much momentum do you think you've built?
Man, I knew I did good, but I'd really take a step back. And sometimes, I don't pay too much attention to it, but the amount of social media growth I've seen is outlandish, man. I mean, I've only had two UFC fights and a contender series fight, and I've already got 170,000 followers. Just when I quit my job, the people that was commenting, like, I mean, even Marab commented on it and told me congratulations. Like, I'm getting some real traction. And I think the real, like, the crazy moment for me was when, Ariel Helwani introduced me before he brought me on, and he was like, I feel like we're watching a star, possibly a UFC champion, be born. And I'm just like, I'm backstage waiting to be brought on camera, and I'm like, he talking about me? Like, and it's just like, damn, like, I know I've got people excited. I know I put on some good performances, but it seems like, I mean, it's they really believe and they're really excited. I mean, it's more momentum than I even realized I had.
Let's be serious now. Don't lie to me here. What did you think the second that you landed that punch on Moutinho? What clocked your head?
I said, in my head, I was like, that's another 50,000. I knew from that moment. That's why I was in the cage and I was doing this. I mean, there's no way. It's Chris Moutinho, and it's the first round. I mean, brother, I knew it was another 50K, and I just knew we was about to have a good night, man. That was my immediate thoughts.
Malcolm, since training in the sport and stuff, I've realized that, really good punches, people with really crisp, conventional boxing within MMA, they're really patient in there, really cerebral. We've seen it with JDM. He's patient, using his hands. Ilya's also patient. They have a purpose. Now you're the same to an extent because you've got really good counter punching. So you feel like people coming towards you is playing into your game. So you get to be calm in there. So I've seen a lot of fighters rush in the cage, and it doesn't always work out for them. So for you, I always see that these KOs, they're coming and they're just happening as is. You're not really rushing the exchanges, and you're not forcing that to take place. You're just allowing it. So tell me, with these big moments, do you feel pressured to rush in there, or do you just stick to your game knowing that eventually, if you catch him, you can put him out?
First of all, I want to compliment your ability to break that down. That was beautiful. But to be honest, like you said, I am at heart a counterpuncher. I like for guys to open up and for me to make reads and for me to land a counterpunch. So, I don't necessarily feel pressured to make exchanges happen, but I think even with the Chris Moutinho fight, if you take a look back at it, it wasn't a counterpunch that knocked them out. It was me making an opening. And one of the things I pride myself on is that I'm not completely reliant on only counterpunching, So many different facets of my game I do think will show more over time, but I have the ability to walk forward. I have the ability to walk back. And I think it all depends on what the guy's giving me. So I like to think that, I have the fight IQ necessary to make the reads to know what I need to do, and I have the skill set to match to where I can meet that IQ and actually execute on the openings I see. But preferably in my heart, like you said, I like the counter strike. I like guys from my way. I like to move on the back foot. I like to hurt them on their way in. But I could do either one, and I like to think there's no pressure involved in either one.
Malcolm, I read that you said that you pushed yourself until you wanted to quit. So tell me about these dark moments, either when you were coming up and there wasn't that much money in the game to push yourself there, or pushing yourself through this difficult sport that is MMA. So let me know, how did you overcome and push through these specific dark moments for yourself?
Yeah, this is a very it's a more intricate part of my story that a lot of people don't really know. Because a lot of people hear, oh, I'm a pipe fitter welder, and they think, oh, he makes good money. Like, what's he stressing about? The hardest part has to be the workload. But that's not necessarily true. We do make good money, but 99% of our work that pays good or is even consistent is on the road. And for the past 2.5 years of my piping career, I worked the in-town contractor job, and it pays significantly less than, like, nuclear work or travel work. And the work's a lot more dirty, and the hours are a lot more inconsistent. It was holidays where during Christmas we had like 3 weeks off at a time because there was no work. There were layoffs happening all the time. 20-hour work weeks happened all the time. It was really tough. And from the moment I made my pro debut in 2022, I had to take $1,000 of that pay and give it back to my brother because I couldn't pay my mortgage at the time. I had to borrow money from him, and I was in the hole for 2 years straight, fighting through the local scene as a professional. This is a funny story. Nobody's heard this, but my last regional fight was against Chase Boutwell in Atlanta. My money was extremely tight, and the fight happened in January. My fight camp was in the winter during one of those 3 week spans where we had no work, and my water heater was busted. So I took cold showers that whole camp. The only time I got to take a warm shower was if I went to Gold's Gym to finish a workout for that night, and I showered at the gym before I came home. But that whole camp, like, I was pissed, I was broke, and I was taking cold showers. I fought him for $1,000 and $1,000 to win. I had bills I was in the hole on. 3 months later in April, my truck gets repossessed, and I'm 3 months behind on my mortgage. I had to file for a partial claim, and I'm borrowing my pops's, who's my gym owner's, Jeep, and the fucking car alarm goes off every 30 minutes, and I have to run out there to cut it off because it's just busted, and just going through all these things and these struggles where people from the outside think, I'm living a glamorous life, I'm a local celebrity, I'm knocking people out. And bro, I had no guarantee, that I was gonna make it here. But to be honest, man, like I said, Pops, him letting me borrow his vehicle was the same guy that was telling me it's gonna pay off. He was the same guy that was telling me, man, you got a gift that you can knock out world champions with that power. You just gotta stay the course. And I did. I watched all the guys I went through the apprenticeship with go to Texas, go to New York, make 200,000 in a year, and I'm here making barely 60. I watched that happen, and those are the same guys that's calling me and telling me congratulations because they see what I'm doing. So it was hard, man. It was tough, and I had to have a lot of belief, not just in myself, but what my coaches was telling me. And I'm just supremely thankful that I'm here, and like I said, this what I've experienced and what I've been given is more than I thought I was gonna have.
When I researched you, Malcolm, you said that you were in some sort of almost like a trap house with some people. Like, that's what you said. That's what you said, right?
Oh man, you're pulling out a gush though.
So I want to know what was the craziest shit that you saw when you were in that house with all the boys?
Oh man. There's so much crazy stuff. I tell you this, one of my best friends, he does my video work. And he literally just showed me one of his Snapchat memories of us in that kitchen. Brother, I pray nobody ever finds that footage because, oh Lord, they will have a field day with comparing back then to now, just the lifestyle I was living.
What you need is you need to get another bonus and pay him off so he doesn't upload that,
That's right. Yeah, we gonna scrap all that footage, brother. But here's a funny story. I remember back then I dealt with a lot of toxic women, obviously. And there was this one girl that I broke up with, man, and she was very unhappy about it. And she stabbed my tires religiously for the next 6 months and any girl I was dealing with. And I could not catch her. Brother, she was slick as could be. I could not get a hold of her. Well, this night in particular, that same guy I'm telling you about that showed me that footage. He coming, he waking me up while I'm sleeping in my bed. And I'm like, what's what? Like, what's going on? It's like 2 o'clock in the morning. He was like, she out there right now. She creeping down the driveway. I'm like, what? She creeping down the driveway. So I'm trying to hurry up and put on clothes. And I run and I look out the window on the front door and I see her like creeping up the driveway about to stab my tires. So, I grab something and I go outside the door and I start chasing her and she runs on foot and leaves a vehicle. And so we start running and chasing her. And then when we come back, because she went through the woods, we come back, her friend was still in the car. Her friend jumps in the driver's seat, pulls off, and leaves. And it's crazy because we called the cops that night because I had been telling them my ex stabbed my tires, my ex stabbed my tires. They didn't believe me. And bro, they found her in a shopping center on the other side of the woods, and they brought her back in a patrol car. And man, it was just an absolute mess, brother. And one of the many stories that we look back on and laugh on from the trap house days. So good times. Good times.
Malcolm, one thing that I like to say about the athletes is if someone's condition, like their body itself, is physically fit, it is almost like an analogy for their mind. And I think that's really important because the more physically fit you are, it shows that you can't cut corners for shit like that. And everyone talks about that you're jacked. How do you keep yourself mentally strong? What do you do for yourself to keep yourself mentally strong? Seeing that we can see the expression with your work and your athleticism.
You know, it's funny, man. It's a lot of workouts and training that I did on my way here before I got to the UFC, and that I still do that I don't have to. I did distance runs a lot, 10 mile runs plus. I remember during COVID, for 2 months straight, every Sunday I ran 20 miles, and for the week I clocked 50 plus. Like it was, it's stuff like that that I did that even though I knew it wasn't contributing to my performance as a fighter, it was contributing to my mental discipline. And for instance, I'm actually about to put out a vlog, but I'm working with the Performance Institute now, and I have a conditioning coach. And we've gotten away from the distance runs. He's prescribing me interval runs, which are typically done on what's called an air runner in a gym. And when he sent me these prescriptions, I said, "Hey, is it cool if I do it outside on a track?" He was like, "You're gonna be running on ground rather than a treadmill at the gym. It's gonna be in the heat of the summer." He was like, "It's gonna pull back your metrics a little bit." He was like, "If you want to, of course. But typically, guys do this, in a controlled setting." And I'm like, "Brother, I got to get out there in the sun. I got to do it." You know what I mean? And it's like, I ought to do the things that I don't have to do when I don't want to do them, because it's about psychology. It's not just about, the optimal way to hit numbers and be in shape. Like there's some things that you can't put on a scale. There's some things you can't put a number next to. And I believe in making it as hard as I can on myself mentally sometimes to keep that edge. And in turn, I mean, of course, it keeps me in shape as well. But my mind, man, my mind is as tough as my body looks for sure.
You said key to success for you was to work hard and surround yourself with the right people. So I know for a fact that the coaches you're working with are the right people for you because of the sequencing that I heard they do with you. They explain some sequences for that would work for your opponents, and then they try and set up knockouts, and you have a couple variations of what you can get them with. Now, that in of itself is really smart, and anyone that's listening to this podcast should think that out. If your opponent has a deficiency in their skill set, you should work to capitalize on that, and that's a knockout, that's a submission.
That's right.
So let me know how important, how vital has it been working with those guys, and just tell me a little bit about that relationship you have with them.
Yeah, man. So I was saying this before the Chris Mutino fight, but like, no exaggeration, man. Almost every single one of my knockouts I have, my coaches have called that shot and saying this could be the shot to do it. It's not always one shot we commit to and like this is the one, no other shot. Like we have a couple different scenarios and variations that we believe is going to be the route to get that devastating knockout. And almost every one of my knockouts, they have called that shot and we've drilled it to an extent. So this is no exception, and they are absolutely brilliant at what they do. So my belief in them is unparalleled. And to show you how unparalleled it is, if you look back at the Adam Bramhall fight, in my heart, I knew I was a better striker than this guy. And as we're fighting, I'm feeling like I'm starting to get my time. And he's having small moments of success, nothing crazy. But like, I know how I fight, I know the reads I make, and I know I'm getting closer. I'm getting closer. And I hear my coach, Pops, he calls for me to shoot a takedown. Now, the theory behind it was not to take him down, work him on the ground, but to make him think about level changes. I heard my coach say it. I didn't want to do it. I heard my coach say it. I didn't want to do it. He called for it maybe three times. And on that third one, I just went. I lowered and I, you know, tried to hit almost like a knee pick. And in my heart, I'm telling you, bro, I did not want to do it. But simply just because my coach told me to do it, bro, I'm going to do it. And I'm loyal to a fault. And thus far, it's worked for me. But that relationship is imperative. You know, I have to have that belief in what they tell me to do, whether it's something that I believe is the right thing to do or they believe is the right thing to do. And it's gotten me here, man. So it's unparalleled.
Malcolm, I'll run this by you. So everyone's considering you like an up-and-comer, a young up-and-comer, right? But at bantamweight, you're 31, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel, this is my opinion, that if you're disciplined and you have a smart approach to the sport where you're skill building, but you're not taking ridiculous damage in training irrationally. We've seen Daniel Cormier, we've seen Randy Couture. These guys might have come into the sport a little bit later and have gotten 9 titles upwards of that. So I think personally that now in the sport, if you're able to start later and you have a good approach, that it doesn't inhibit your progress whatsoever. And I feel like you kind of embody that too. So how do you feel about that?
You know, I'm a 100% believer in that. And there's many elements that work in my favor. But, you know, the place I'm at in my life right now, like not the trap house life, right? You know, so many things in my life are in the right place to complement my set of goals and the lifestyle I'm living. You know, if you want to talk about mileage on my body, I literally didn't start training any contact sport or whatsoever training hard until 22. So the mileage on my body is low comparatively speaking with the other athletes I'm next to. My maturity level, you know, is at a certain place where mentally I'm maxed with my physical body. And on top of that, like, I have so many training partners. Now, granted, a lot of them are, you know, some of them are amateur athletes, some of them are casual, some of them are high-level pros as well. But these are like brothers and family members to me. You know, we're not in there ripping submissions. We're not in there, if we hurt each other with a shot, we're not going for the finish. Like, I feel absolutely safe with my group of guys, and we're all bought in on this common goal amongst each other. So, like, you know, the guys in my corner that, you know, fostered this relationship I have with them, fostered this culture at my gym. And I feel like that's why I've been able to be so successful. Like, I've had minimal injuries in my career. And even now, like, most of my fights I go into, my injuries are very minor compared to what most fighters go into fights dealing with. So I think that you are definitely on the same train of thought that I am. And I think that my ceiling for what I can perform and accomplish in this sport is very little limited by my age, you know, and as long as I can mitigate the things like the injuries that could derail my timeline, I think that I can go and really maximize what I get out of this sport and how high I can go.
With that being said, what do you think is the key takeaway, the piece of advice that fighters that are coming up should take from that?
Don't leave your career in the gym, man. You know, I know so many people who the nature of competitiveness not only hurts them physically, right? I mean, they're tearing knees, they're jacking up shoulders and concussing each other, right? That's the obvious immediate problem. But the other problem is when you're so competitive and want to win so badly, you limit how much you can learn. You know, I got to a place where getting tapped wasn't the end of the world for me a long time ago. And the amount of growth I've had in my grappling since then is exponential compared to how I was when it was a diehard, don't let anybody that's a lower rank than you tap you. You know, I play with positions. I let people get in on stuff and I try to use technique to get out of it. And that is what makes me develop my skill set more so than develop my ability to take advantage of my athleticism. And so if you can check the ego, if you can not be too competitive when it's not, you know, necessary, I really think that you can maximize how much you get, not just physically, but as far as your skill set goes in the gym too.
Malcolm, I read from your social medias that you're excited about all these potential matchups that people are making. So I wanna run by you some matchups that I've heard that may be in the works for you, and I just want your opinions on these ones. So I saw that Alexander, mm-hmm. might be in the work, right? Run me by that one just first. I got some more for you, but tell me, what do you think about him? That would be boxer versus boxer. Of course, you guys can grapple, but the boxing level in that match, if that's made, that's a serious match.
I think there's no question about the level of skill that Alexander Topuria has. I mean, we know who his main training partner is. We know that he helped prepare Ilya for all of his fights. And he's got the same resources Ilya has. So I think there's bar none, no question about how skilled he is. But we also know that fighting is different than training. You understand what I'm saying? And it's a very exciting fight. I think he has extreme high expectations because of the name that he carries. And I also watched his UFC debut, and he didn't do bad at all, but by no means did he, break the scale of expectations. So that's a fight that I get really excited about because I think that if you put me against somebody whose skill is not in question, and I go out there and I do what I do to people, you know what I mean? I think it really, really propels my career. And I don't even think it's too soon for a matchup like that, to be honest, for myself. I think it's a good fight for me. And I think that that would be an opportunity for me to really surprise people with the skills that I have other than my boxing. And when I do force it to be a boxing match, I think that I'll be able to show that, skill of boxing and fighting boxing is two different things, man. I perform really well under the lights.
Another matchup that I saw, in my opinion, the previous matchup we spoke about, that's a very winnable fight for you. This one, on the other hand, I think you'd probably just smash him. So, former champ Cody Garbrandt, what?
Oh man, bro, I'm not gonna lie, watching him lose his last fight blew my mind, because I'm still up to then, I still had this image of the Cody we all saw become a champion. And to think somebody like Barcelos, now no disrespect to Barcelos, but he doesn't beat that Cody from back then. Nobody would ever put their money on Barcelos to beat that Cody. And it sucks because it made it a reality that Cody is no longer the fighter that, I fell in love with. And that doesn't change the fact that I'm a huge fan of him. And with that being said, man, I would never want to fight that guy. Ever, ever want to fight that guy. If the offer came across, man, I begged my management to try to find something else. Even though I don't have to hate somebody to fight him, but he was one of the guys that, really inspired me, that I watched religiously when I got into the game. But nonetheless, man, I have absolute confidence in my ability to do what I do to people if they put me in the cage with them.
Malcolm, what message do you think you have for the bantamweight division right now so you can put everybody on notice?
Man, my message to the bantamweight division is when you get in the cage with me, you better shoot, man. I believe that I am one of the best strikers in the world. I've been telling myself this before I got to this stage, and it's not out of arrogance, it's not out of delusion, but it's because I know that I have to believe that to be able to be that. Mike Tyson said, you got to be a champ here before you're a champ here. Like, that's one of my favorite things I've seen Mike Tyson say. And I live and die by that, man. To this day, I do my rounds in the gym and I tell myself, you're one of the best strikers in the world. So for anybody that gets into the cage with me, man, if they'd like to test their luck with striking, I gladly will engage, and I plan on putting them on another highlight reel. If they shoot, then I'll get my opportunity to show the world that I can also grapple and wrestle.
Malcolm, you're the machine. The champ of the division is the machine also. Dom Cruz is said to be kind of like the goat of that division. And he's got, I believe that's four UFC titles, and I think he has three WEC titles. And Merab now, he's on three. But Merab's strength of schedule, as you know, he's been like four or five UFC champions outside of title fights. Even Henry Cejudo, double champion outside of a title fight. So, let me know, what do you think? Do you think Merab should be put over Dom? Because I believe if you combine Dom's WEC and UFC, he has still has a longer win streak, I believe, if you win together.
If we're talking about GOAT of the UFC bantamweights, I don't quite know that you can bring in Dom's accomplishments outside of the UFC. And I'm not saying that they don't matter, But one of the things that you said that's really strong is like, you know, Merab's beating guys that even if they wasn't title holders at the time, former champions, you know, title contenders. I mean, his rap sheet is very impressive. And then, I mean, look at him. I mean, he's getting better. I think right now it's hard to put him over Dom, because Dom still has the numbers and Dom still is like, you know, his legacy cemented. But Merab's is still developing. And if Merab can look any better than he already has looked, I think he beats Corey Sandhagen, and I think he adds to those numbers in his rap sheet. So I think when Merab is done, when Merab is no longer fighting in the UFC, whether he's a title holder when he leaves or he loses the title before he leaves, I think by then he will outdo Dominick Cruz when it goes as far as UFC bantamweight go.
Malcolm, I looked at your career and I watched the Austin Carter fight, the debut, right? In Augusta. You said 3 years ago, you said that he'll pay in cash. And it, also, yeah, this was on Conflict MMA. And one thing that I needed to take from this was that it was 2 weeks after your birthday. And that guy, that motherfucker had a chin on him, bro.
Brother,
Put him
listen,
in the UFC, bro.
bro, you know what's so funny? This is so funny. To this day, me and my coach still say this shit. He says, if I'd have known he was that tough, I would not have signed him for your debut. Because, oh my God, that was a test and it was not supposed to be. That was my UFC debut of my, I mean, my pro debut in my hometown. I was supposed to starch this kid. Bro, I had to choke him out. You know what I'm saying? We
Bro,
still laugh about it to this day.
I'm not gonna lie, you smashed him, but he was fucking there. He was there trying to get you.
Brother, my hands, elbows, everything, I could barely move them for 2 weeks, bro. And it was just like I hit him so hard. And every time he walks forward very fast. I mean, he power walked to me. It was, I'm glad you watched that, man. Anybody who wants to see whether I got a dog in me, go watch that fight. Oh my God. Sick, sick, brother.
Another one that people need to know about is the fact that you fought a guy named Taylor Moore, right? And it was for a title. When you fought this guy, the reason I bring this up, it's important, is because it was a five rounder. And everybody that wants to talk about contenders, they talk about the attributes. What does he have here? What does he have there? You can go five rounds. So you've got that cardio. How does it feel that you already know that you've got the energy reserves and you know how to space out your energy in the fight, that you can go those long distances, and you're not even in these 5 round fights yet, but you still can do it.
Yeah, man. Oh, man, you do your research, brother. You know, it's so funny watching the casuals comment on so many of my posts, man, and the objections they make. And obviously, I never engage because if you do, you lose regardless, right? But yeah, man, bro, I can fight all day. Like I can do a dog fight, I can do a technical fight. And like Taylor Moore was like my kryptonite. Like he was a strong wrestler. I had to keep him off of me. And I remember even in the fifth round, he got in on a hard double, and I had to make a decision right then and there. Like, am I gonna fight this double or like accept position and work my way up, bro? And I fought it as hard as I could, and it was a high-paced 5-round fight, man. You know, I talked to my management about this, but fights like him, Zakariya Kamara, Austin Carter, when you look back at these fights I had before the UFC, like they were tests. They were trying to see if I had what it took, and my manager said I passed with flying colors. You know, I didn't knock those guys out, and I'm glad I didn't, because I got to answer some questions like, you know, do I have that mental and psychological strength? Do I have the ability to wrestle somebody who wrestles like that is their game plan? Do I have the ability to use wrestling against somebody that's 6'1"? You know, Zakariya Kamara was a beanstalk, brother. You know what I mean? I could not get past his jab, you know, so I got to answer these questions about myself. And that Taylor Moore fight in particular, man, I remember walking away and saying, you know, the best thing about this fight is I proved to myself I am who I thought I was. And I'm glad I got that experience. Very glad.
With the Zakariya fight, you know, what I really liked out of your game there was, you know, he had really good movement and he was causing me some problems on the feet really early because he was tall and all the attributes. Then In terms of finishing potential for yourself, the second the hands weren't working, they got into a, you know, you got into a clinch type of fight.
Nice.
And the amount of submission attempts I saw out of you showed me a really submission dominant grappling style, which that goes to show that you had a finishing style for striking, and you had a finishing style for grappling, which, as we've seen, no one's been able to really grapple with you in the UFC. But if anyone needs tape to see how you perform under those uncomfortable positions that people would think that you would lack in, you passed with flying colors, and you made it as uncomfortable as possible for him.
Yeah, man, it's so funny that you say that, because I actually was scrolling through memories and I saw the post that I posted after the Zachariah Kamara fight. And I walked away from that fight feeling defeated, because it was my first split decision win. And I, you know, I was like, damn, one of the judges thought I lost. Like, how many other people thought I lost? And it messed with me bad. But, you know, the post I put up after I actually reflected on it was, you know, I won that fight with grappling. I won that fight with wrestling. And, like, once again, a test passed with flying colors. And I look back at the fighter I was back then, brother, my grappling was so undeveloped compared to where I'm at now. Like, and just like the amount of growth I'm seeing with my grappling, with me being a full-time athlete now, man, like, I can tell that you've done your research and you don't have the worries that a lot of the casuals have with me being a one-punch pony, right? One-trick pony. But like, man, I work very, very hard to mitigate those problems and to not have to deal with the worries of getting exposed or getting heat checked. Like, if a guy puts me on my back and I can't do anything, he's world class. And that's the only person that'll be able to do it. But other than that, you know, you give me a guy that's, you know, a decently ranked opponent, or a guy that has a reputation for being a well-rounded guy, he's going to have a hard time with me.
In the last two decades, there hasn't been that many fighters out of Augusta.
I'm the first since Forrest Griffin. So Forrest Griffin, it was obvious like 20 years ago. And even then, like, a lot of people from Augusta don't even know it, you know, because he stays in Vegas. He works at the PI, you know, and it's like an old school legend. The old school MMA guys know. But yeah, man, if you just want to talk new gen for what the UFC is known for now, like, I'm that first guy. I'm the face of it in Augusta.
Do you are you happy that you get to represent your you know, your area?
Absolutely. Like, I almost take more pride in that than anything. You know, I was born and raised here. My camp is, they're all Augusta natives. You know, I made my regional career fighting in Augusta and Atlanta, you know, those areas. And I can tell, man, look, I go and do a lift, I'm getting stopped to take pictures, like, from people that have been watching me since I was an amateur. I'm running around my neighborhood. People are throwing their cars in park, hopping out, taking pictures. Kids in their front yard are stopping me to take, bro. It's like, it means so much to me to see people take pride in being from Augusta, because so many people feel like Augusta is somewhere they want to escape. So many people feel like Augusta is a place that's limiting them. And I feel like I've shown that you can be something great in Augusta and from Augusta. And I want to bring that hope and that motivation to people who are born here that haven't seen somebody from Augusta be able to do this stuff. And, you know, I'm doing it right now with my performances and with my influences from social media, from the big screen and stuff like that. But I'm in the process of getting, you know, boots on the ground and actually touching the community. So it's something that I love and I really take pride in.
Malcolm, one thing that you said that I think was kind of underappreciated when you said it, because of actually the gravity of what it actually means, is that you said that for a long time you were the worst guy in the gym, right? And they kind of glanced over it. Now, Volkanovski also said that at the time that he thought he was shit at MMA, he still said, I'm going to be a UFC champion, when it wasn't going well for him. So I just want you to tell everybody listening that trains themselves and thinks to themselves, I want to do this, but I'm not capable. And just explaining to them how that is just self-limiting and bullshit, because if you put that work in, you can level up no matter where you are in the journey. You can fix all your problems and level up.
Yeah, man, you know, this complex of feeling like the position you're at in life, the age you are, the lack of experience or background you have or resources that you have will keep you from being something great, is the only thing between you and that greatness. You know what I mean? Like, I'm telling you, man, when I walked into that gym, I just wanted to get in shape. I was incredibly out of shape. We do a Sunday conditioning workout every Sunday. I threw up the first four times, and the fifth time I finally did it. Like, I was that far away from from step one. You know what I mean? I was in the negatives. And just by showing up, just by putting one foot in front of the other, man, it snowballed into not just me taking a kickboxing match, but to me taking an MMA fight, to going pro and becoming somebody that has inspired a whole, you know. No telling how many people with my story, man. I am a living proof that you can be below the lowest guy in the room. You can walk into the gym and be the literal worst guy. High schoolers were putting me on my back. Grapplers were outboxing me. I mean, I had zero experience in any type of competitive sport or any type of combat sport at that. And I mean, you fast forward 8 years later and you know I'm getting $50,000 bonuses, man. You can do it, but you are your own worst enemy, you know. Don't let yourself limit what you can accomplish in this lifetime, and at least try.
As we're wrapping up, I've got a couple more things for you. And you said that when you were growing up, you never got the chance to take big trips. And now that you're in a financial position to do that in your adulthood, now you get to. And I want to ask you, what would you say to Malcolm Wellmaker at 20 years old? What would you say to him now?
Man, you know, first I got to look back at where was I at when I was 20. You know what I mean? I had just got back to Augusta within a year or so because I went to Georgia Southern. It didn't work out for me. I come back home. I'm living with my mom. I'm working at the time. That was before I got into the trade because I got into trade at 21. So I was working food line, bagging and getting buggies out the parking lot, and I was working a second job at a call center. I hated it. You know what I mean? I was getting paid 850 at the call center. I was getting paid 725 at Food Lion. Bro, you know, I had just got back from Georgia Southern, which I felt was the peak of my life, and I felt like I was stuck back in Augusta and that I'd never be as happy as I was in college. And you know, I'd go back and I'd talk to that young kid and I'd tell him, man, if you thought college was good, just wait to see, you know, what's in store for you. Keep your head up. You know what I mean? Don't let life beat you down. Don't feel like nobody cares about your story. Don't feel like nobody will remember you. And have faith that there's a plan for you. And man, it made it a lot easier for me to endure the things that I did to get here.
The final question I have for you for today is, what do you think was the biggest sacrifice that you've made so far for your fighting career?
You know, one of the biggest sacrifices I had to make on the way here was, I think friends and relationships. You know, the money is one thing. I was in a position with my career and my skill set to go make a lot of money. I missed out on a lot of money, but I don't really care about the money. But there's people that was beside me when I first started this journey that, you know, supported me, and it was easy to support me. But over the years, when you miss enough birthday parties, when you turn them down enough on vacations, when you don't answer enough phone calls because you're exhausted and you gotta, you know, try to get some rest before training, it's hard for people to accept the terms of that friendship or that relationship. And it's heartbreaking that when you finally get to the goal that you were trying to get to, the amount of people you wanted to share that joy with is drastically lowered. You know what I mean? I used to have, when I was staying in that house I was telling you about, man, there was always 6, 8, 10, 12 people that I would consider good friends that was always around. But it was so much easier for me to be the friend that I needed to be for them, for us to be happy with our friendship. But as I changed my lifestyle and I had to be more selfish, many of them dropped off. And now that I'm here, I might got two of those guys from that era in my life that are, you know, sharing this experience with me. So I hate it. You know, and I know those guys don't feel any type of way that they're not as close to me because of it anymore. Of course, like, you know, we're all adults and life changes. But that's the toughest sacrifice because I love those guys dearly, you know, and I saw a lot of their lives going different directions, and I wish I could have been more of who I was when we met for them. But it's okay because them just seeing me finally make it here still puts a smile on their face. So that's probably what it is.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Malcolm, for your time. Is there any final remarks or messages you want to tell the fans at home as we wrap up the podcast?
No, nothing in particular, man. You know, I always say with hard work and the right people around you, you can accomplish anything in life, and that's been true to me. So make sure you surround yourself with the right people. And if you put in the work, you know, what's destined for you and what's in store for you will come true. That's the biggest thing. And then, of course, I want to say thank you to Goals Gym. Those guys, you know, I'll keep it short, but, you know, I met those guys because we was doing a big Augusta fight night, and they were hosting a charity seminar at an underprivileged school in South Carolina. None of the pro athletes could show up because of the time or whatever it may be. And literally outside of one other athlete, I showed up. And at the time, I was 3-0 as an amateur, and the Goals owners had no idea who I was, but they were sponsoring the event. That was the first day meeting me. They saw me work with those kids. And from that day, which was 6 years ago to now, they fly all over the country to come see me fight. They were doing it before I got to the UFC. They put money in my pocket when I couldn't pay my bills. They really changed my life, and I really look at them like family, and they fall under that umbrella of keeping the right people around you. So keep the right people around you, man. Put in the work, and it's no telling what life has in store for you.
Follow Malcolm Wellmaker on socials. I'll put the link in the description, and follow Anything Combat. We will see you all next time.
Become a combatant.